Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by AskMe People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Yo, welcome into the House of L podcast. I'm Lawrence Holmes. Thank you so much for checking us out, especially those of you that are on YouTube as well. We are putting almost all of our content on the YouTube page when we can. I'm going to take my headphones off because I kind of don't need them anymore once I fade out the music, but I wanted to say hello to all of the new subscribers to the House of L YouTube page. It's appreciated that you would check out what we're doing over here. And thank you for the support. There'll be all sorts of different types of content, like the podcast. Like, we do a lot of sports stuff. There'll be some short stuff occasionally. I really appreciate if some of the videos that we threw up kind of as beta test over the last 2 years, if you go back and look at them, especially the Minnie Minoso piece that I put together and the Rube Foster piece that are on the House of LP page. And I did that with the White Sox, which was a lot of fun. This won't be fun for the White Sox, I don't imagine. At least this episode won't be fun. But we appreciate you watching and listening to the podcast. If you are a YouTube subscriber, welcome. And there was an episode of the podcast that wasn't on YouTube. So if you just search House of L, whether it's Spotify or Apple, you can find the episode that I did with Charles Tillman. And I think in lieu of what happened at the Hall of Fame weekend, I think that you'll truly enjoy it. I really do. Unfortunately, we have to talk about some ugliness. And that ugliness is the White Sox having lost now 20 in a row. And it's, I got to tell you, like, I got a lot of grief from people when I kind of renounced my White Sox fandom. And I mean, this was even having long conversations with people who work at the White Sox. I'm also, between me, you, and the lamppost, I imagine that I would have been one of the reasons why one of those people was really mad is that I would have probably been in contention for the play-by-play job for the White Sox had I not done that, because 4 years ago, I was in contention for the radio job. And of course, that went to Lynn Casper. And even if I was picking, I'd pick Lynn Casper over me. But I imagine that that is part of the reason that I had multiple long conversations with people who work with the White Sox about this. The other part is that I know that a bunch of those people over there have seen me as someone who has been trying desperately to be fair to the White Sox. And I told them, I was like, I'm not going to stop being fair. I believe in being fair. It's one of the principles that I try to build, that I built my career on. It doesn't mean that I don't get emotional. It doesn't mean that I won't pull out the driver when I have to, but I try really hard to be fair when looking at all of the situations that have to do with the teams that we cover, and you just try to be honest, there's nothing that anyone can say about this particular White Sox team. Here's what's crazy to me, and I tweeted about it, and I saw some of your feedback, and I'm at Lawrence W. Holmes for those of you who are not checking us out on YouTube. Look, when the season started and you looked at the White Sox roster, it was pretty easy to see that they were not going to be very good. And then you thought, well, at some point they're going to make trades, and when they make trades, they're going to be even worse. This is one of those things where I remember talking to fans at the Sox Machine. The Sox Machine guys had a really great preseason party the day before the season started. It was really awesome. By the way, it was at the Romova Theater, which has a lot of history to it, and I highly recommend that you look up the history of the Romova Theater. And I guess Jennifer Hudson and Chance the Rapper and Quincy Jones, like three prominent Chicagoans, like got together and put the money up to get the thing back on its feet. And now it has a brewery as well. I went over to the Romova Brewery on Friday night, and it's delightful. I had a drink and then went around the corner to the Mexican restaurant over there. And apparently the Bridgeport Diner, you know, that's gone. There's supposed to be a new place. I think it's called Stussy or Stussy, and it's opening up this week. So if you haven't been in Bridgeport for a minute, you should wander around 35th and Halsted because there's new stuff over there. But the Sox Machine guys had this really wonderful event, and there were hundreds of White Sox fans who were there, and I was on a panel talking about what I thought the season would be. Now, hope springs eternal. Most people think that when spring training comes around and we get close to the season starting, that their team has as good a chance as any other team of being good and making the playoffs and all this stuff. But you could look at the White Sox roster and you could see that it wasn't really going to happen for them. And it's just gotten worse. It's like progressively gotten worse. Like they get off to the bad start. Then there's the 14 game losing streak that they go on. And you can just see it start to snowball. And I think that where a lot of my skepticism was on whether or not they'd be able to pull out of any sort of spiral is that I don't have a lot of trust in the manager or the general manager. Like, here's what I'll tell you. Just talking to people around it earlier this week, there were folks who believed that before they left for Minnesota, that Pedro Grifol was going to get fired. Facts. There are a lot of people who were preparing stories to write or video montages. There are a lot of people who believe that that was the case. Now, I know that when you look at it and you say, well, Lawrence, does firing the manager really mean anything? I understand that point of view. I think that multiple things can be true. I think that the White Sox are not necessarily bad because of Pedro Grifol. And also, Pedro Grifol is not qualified to be a major league manager. And it was really important for me, and Dan and I would have these discussions too, where you have to kind of figure out like how much coverage you're going to do on this. And there are niche places, and I've talked about it before on this very podcast. There are places where if you want specific White Sox coverage, you can get it. And I've talked about, you know, the CHGO guys, like, really do great stuff. Sox Machine guys, obviously. The Future Sox guys and myriad of bloggers. The 108 guys. Like, there's a ton of people who are covering it. I've always felt like the White Sox as a brand have struggled with getting a foothold into taking up space inside of Chicago sports fans' mind. And when I was a young producer at the Score, I do remember the wars of the White Sox, for lack of a better term, measuring column inches in the Sun-Times and the Tribune back then, or trying to treat the Score as if it were a network and this was a presidential situation, or political, I shouldn't say presidential, but political, where there's the concept of equal time. And they always felt like they deserved equal time with the Cubs. And the argument for that, I don't know if it's very good when you can't prove that you have an equal amount of people who are interested. And it's gone back and forth. And, you know, I really like a lot of people who work at the White Sox for the last, even now, like even, and honestly, like I'm one of the people, I actually like Rick and Kenny, both individually. I like them both. But the way things have gone, when I talk to everyone on the show about White Sox content, I'll be real with you. Like, our bosses came to us a couple weeks ago and were like, unless it's something phenomenal, like the Brian Bannister interview, which we did, they were like, it's not rating. So even if you think, oh, well, Lawrence and Dan want the White Sox to lose so they could rail against the White Sox for ratings, you've tuned out. Like, we have gone far beyond that being something that will allow for there to be more people who are listening or watching or reading, which makes you kind of go, hey, so why are you doing this podcast? Round numbers are sexy. People like talking about round numbers, and seeing this streak get to 20 games has been amazing. Like, you would think that just by variance or luck or their due or whatever fallacy that you want to throw at this team being bad, that they would find themselves a win. And the truth is that they're just not competitive. And I mean that all the way around. I don't think that they have a very competitive roster. I don't think that they have a very competitive manager. And I don't think that they have a very competitive GM. I've made up my mind, like everyone else has, when it comes to Grifol. With Chris Getz, I'm skeptical, but I'm willing to see. He needs to kind of, Grifol has had a body of work, right? So Getz has a body of work, but not in the job that he has, which is part of the problem because it skews things. We know that he played a huge role in the players that the White Sox have available. So you judge him on being part of the problem, but now he's the guy in charge. How is he going to go ahead and try to work through it? And then I get frustrated because I don't feel like his trade deadline activity was very strong. And it kind of puts me back in the position of, I didn't like the hire in the first place, and there hasn't been anything that has told me that I should give some sort of dispensation or grace to him as the general manager of the White Sox. There's nothing that says that. And so they're stuck. And they're going to be stuck for a long time. I wish that I could give every White Sox fan a little bit of hope. But this is why I pulled the parachute, man. Like, I pulled the cord on it. Because I don't think that things are going to change until there's an ownership change. In whatever form that takes, you know, I don't see how. Because let's say that you believe that the White Sox can do this with development. I would tell you to show me your work, but okay, if they can do it with development, it's going to take a really long time. And even if that is your course of action, the route that you take to try to get better, there still needs to be a financial component where you're adding people to your developmental aspect of things. Like, there, you still have to spend money. And what we've seen the White Sox do is occasionally they're spending money, and mostly they've been spending it in the wrong places. You look at their two biggest deals that they've put together, and it's two guys that are not very good. It didn't make sense for them to do it. Yasmani Grandal, and I remember all the people making arguments of, well, he's going to frame pitches. And I'm like, he also struggles to just catch the ball. But I'm not here to relitigate them signing Yasmani Grandal. The Andrew Benintendi thing is just as bad. Who pays for a corner outfielder who usually a left fielder can't, like, he's the least best defensive guy in the outfield, but he can't catch or throw, and he's not hitting 40 home runs a year. Like, that's one of those things where you go, you can make the argument for Adam Dunn playing left field for a team because Adam Dunn is going to hit 35 home runs and he's going to get on base 34% of the time. You can't make that argument for Andrew Benintendi. So they can't spin their way. They're not going to spin their way out of all of this. Like, that's the part that sucks, is that if you felt like you had, like, Steve Cohen, the owner of the Mets, he might crash and burn as an owner, but it won't be because he didn't keep trying to invest into the team. And the investment issue for the White Sox is really complicated because it doesn't feel like they want to invest in what ends up being on the field. I am so happy that Badlands Pet Superfood Complete is back on House of L. So I don't have a dog, but I have a friend who has a dog, and that dog has kind of become my best friend. His name is Pudge. He's adorable. He's a Morkie, a Maltese Yorkie mix. So I said, I want to bring over Badlands Pets Superfood Complete and have Pudge try it. And if he liked it, then we were going to stick with Badlands Pets and keep it going. He loved it. We mixed it with a little bit of water. He's a teeny tiny guy, 7 pounds. We mixed it with a little bit of water, and he absolutely loved it. And now, when it's mixed with his other foods, he sifts through that to get to Badlands Pets Superfood Complete. Between that and the mission that Katherine Heigl has been on, I feel like it's a company that House of L should be partnered with for a long time. And you're going to be the beneficiary of this. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/Loho. I'll say it again. BadlandsRanch.com/Loho. And if you order right now, we're going to give you 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things just like my guy Pudge did, go to BadlandsRanch.com/Loho. BadlandsRanch.com/Loho. We're going to give you 50% off. Pudge is going to be happy. You're going to be happy. Your doggo is going to be happy. We're happy that Badlands Ranch is back with House of L, and we hope that you benefit from it and your doggo loves it. That there are other things that they want to invest in, and I understand that. I think Jerry Reinsdorf has proven to be a really good at handling and dancing with politicians to kind of get what he wants. And the situation with the Bulls in the United Center, I actually think is a really good plan. part of the reason that I think is a good plan is that at least initially, that's private money. And that's a neighborhood that already exists. And we should probably, you know, to not to get too political, but we should probably, instead of inventing new neighborhoods, we should probably do a better job of investing in the neighborhoods that we already have, where people are already at. And you don't need to disrupt the rest of the city by creating something new when there are plenty of opportunities to make things better for folks that are already there. But to get back to like on the field White Sox stuff, they just don't seem that interested in making the team better. I've heard a bunch of different theories on this. Some of it is that maybe Jerry doesn't want to do this because why would he invest in it when he knows he's not going to own the team much longer? That the White Sox, if Jerry steps down, if he leaves ownership, that they're just going to sell. Like, it's really sad. Like, I hate it for White Sox fans. I hate this position that you've been put in. And honestly, I think that some of the discourse about the White Sox has been people lashing out at the wrong thing. And at the beginning of the year, it was lashing out at people who were telling you that the White Sox were going to be bad, even though you knew in your heart that the White Sox were going to be bad. And it's continued. Like, there is clearly a right answer on who to be mad at in this situation with the White Sox. It's clear. And they're stuck. Like, they're absolutely stuck. And what bothers me about it is I do know that there are so many good people that are trying hard to tell the White Sox story. That they kind of are the little engine that could in some ways. They do have this relationship with the South Side that I think is unique. And I think they need to do a better job of telling it. But I will say that some of my frustration too is the telling of that story is often wrapped in fantasy. It's wrapped in, if you don't like it, then you can go to hell. Or we're going to tell you that everything's great and it's not. It's strains credibility for everyone involved. When there are like wonderful, beautiful stories about the White Sox that I think they finally seem to get the message a little bit. I'm really happy. Like, we made a bunch of requests. We pretty much request someone from the White Sox like every week. And Dan and I usually, like, our goal when we interview someone, like, if we were interviewing Pedro, it'd be, like, kind of a different vibe, but for good reason. But if they were to have put Michael Kopech on, for example, like, we're not going to beat Michael Kopech up. We're going to talk to him. And we've had, I think, two great White Sox interviews this year. The Eric Fetty interview I thought was phenomenal. The Brian Bannister one was unbelievable. He was so great. Like, and if you were looking for like little places of joy or faith in the White Sox to get better, those are those moments where you go, oh, that could be a thing. Brian Bannister, like the replies that we got from people on the text line during the interview was just people being like, why isn't that guy in charge? Or that guy doesn't sound like he works for the White Sox. And that should be scary for the White Sox, that people have that image of them as an organization. When I was down in Dallas for SEC Media Days, I saw something that I think is probably like my dream job. And just so you know, like White Sox play-by-play guy, like I actually have that in my contract that I can leave the score to go do that. But I'm actually happy that I didn't get the job. Like I was frustrated when I got the phone call like the night before and they were like, we're going to hire Lynn. And I was like, I get it. And then they hire Lynn and I'm like, that's great. And then it's turned into 4 years. Like I would be miserable. I would be straight up miserable if I had that job. But anyway, while I was in Dallas, I found this job title that I'm like, that should be my job. There's an associate athletic director at Missouri who's in charge of strategic comms and storytelling. And I looked up his bio because I was going, oh, I'll probably run into some people. You want to meet people while you're at something like this. And his bio is basically my bio, but in St. Louis. Guy went to Mizzou. He was a journalist. He teaches at the journalism school. And I'm sitting there going, man, I should do that job for DePaul. And at some point, I'll probably pitch them on that idea. Or I should do that job at Alabama. Or someone should do that job at the White Sox. Like, it's about what your messaging is. And I get that none of it, most of it doesn't matter if the team is crap, but you can still present the best possible thing. And that doesn't mean lying to people. That doesn't mean you're snowing folks and acting like things are okay. Like, it's all right to say that things aren't okay. And you can do that professionally too. You know, like that's part of like the strategic communication part of all of these things. But I just feel for fans that are just, where do you turn? There are a lot of people that are like, well, I'm not going to become a Cub fan. I get that. And why would you? I've pretty much like, I went on this journey and I guess I'm technically still on the journey, but I think where the wheel, like if we're spinning the wheel of fortune, when it comes to teams, I don't really want another team. I want the team that I used to root for to do better. And if they're not going to do better, cool. I'm still out on it, but I still love baseball. So I've kind of termed it as like being a baseball agnostic. Like that's what I am now. I enjoy baseball. Baseball is part of my job. But it's hard for me to even think about spending money at that ballpark. And my nephews and nieces like want to go. So I'm probably going to go this month or next month over there. I've got friends that want to go to games. And I'm like, why? Like, this is like, that's the difficult part of how do you allocate? And a lot of people have to do this. Like a lot of White Sox fans are not out here just flush with cash. They budget and they say, I'm going to go to 4 games this year and I can't wait to get out there and I can't wait to be in the tailgate or smell the onions when I walk on the concourse or go to the beer cave or just get together with other White Sox fans. And then you look and you go, man, like, I'm glad that most people like got the message on how bad this team was early on and they kind of went on with their lives and they went on with their summers. But to be let down and know that there isn't a lot of hope, it'd be one thing if this was the olden days where a team could lose their way to a top 5 pick. And that's not even the case anymore for the White Sox, at least for this season. Like they're going to be outside the top 10. And all of it just feels like an incredible waste. It really does. It's sad. And it's going to get sadder. Like, be ready for that. when you're talking about historic stuff, when people are looking in on you almost as like a freak show, because that's how they're viewing this season for the White Sox, is how many games in a row can they lose? Rubs hands like Birdman. How bad will it get? Will they be the 62 Mets? Are they the worst team ever assembled? And no one wants to wear that. And I know that White Sox fans feel like they don't deserve to wear that. And they're right. That's not where the franchise should be, considering that 2 years ago, you had a guy who won a batting title. You had another guy who hit 300. The things were still pointed like sideways. And now it's just a desert. A really, really sad desert. And I feel for you. I truly do. I feel for you. But I also am not big on lying to you. And I can't see a path where this gets better anytime soon. And all of us have to think about it from the standpoint of how many summers, how many days do you want to waste waiting on your team to do something that they should do inherently? No White Sox fan is asking the White Sox to go and win the World Series every single year. Although it'd be nice to be the Dodgers and know that you're going to compete every year. All you want is a little bit of joy, to be outside with your friends, to know that your team at least has some sort of chance. And you look, and the White Sox are 60 games under 500. At the time of this recording, it is August 4th, and they are 60 games under 500. That shit is almost impossible to do in a full season. And there's still 8 weeks to go. Anyway, I've been trying to do a better job of making these episodes shorter. And I'm sorry that I rambled on for as long as I did. Thanks to everyone who has signed up and subscribed to the House of L YouTube page. I appreciate all the views. I truly do. We'll see how this goes. And if it leads to us being able to do more stuff, I'm going to keep adding on. Like, this is, we got some cool stuff coming up for bear season. I can promise you that. And some of it's going to be like exclusive to the YouTube page. So I can't wait. Thanks for your support of this podcast. Tell a friend, give us 5 stars, write a review. I'm telling you, it makes a difference in where we are posted. I'm sorry that things are as bad as they are for you as a White Sox fan. I truly am. I'll talk to you next time. Peace.